Here in the studio, we welcome Miss Emery Franklin. Hey, Emery.
Hi.
It's just great to see you. And I understand this is your first radio interview.
Yes, this is it.
Wow.
First time.
I feel pressure now. I need to deliver the goods here for you.
You feel pressure. I feel pressure. This is my first time here.
So, Emery, you're 20 years old.
Yes.
You're a student at the University of Washington.
Yes.
You're from Friday Harbor, and now you live in Seattle in the U District.
Mm-hmm.
Your music is what little I've heard has just been really impressive.
And thank you.
The first thing that I want to mention just right off the top is that you're playing tonight at the hardware store. Is that
yes.
right? That will be at from 7 to 9 o'clock tonight at the hardware store. Have you played the hardware store? Or you already played one other gig here on the
I have not played the hardware. I played at Snapdragon.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay, so you know Pete Welch?
Yes.
Yes, excellent. He's a good guy to know around here.
Yeah, he seems to be very
in the
know.
If you can do live music, he's the guy. Tell us a little bit about how you got going as a singer-songwriter. On your bio, on your website, it said you really got started when you were like 9 years old.
Yeah, I wanted to play the fifth grade talent show.
Oh, well, so. who doesn't, really?
I had to find a medium and... You know, I was a poet, and my parents got me hooked on playing guitar, Island local guitar shop.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to learn how to, you know, play my favorite songs.
Yeah.
And then right after that talent show, I started singing and starting to write my own things.
Uh-huh.
And by the time I was a freshman in high school, I kind of took the songwriting to a different level and really started producing. And when I was 17, I took my first trip to Nashville and got connected with a group there, had my first EP essentially produced, mm-hmm. and got a taste of, you know, the music business and realized mm-hmm. I wanted to do this for the rest of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it the trip to Nashville that was the eye-opening experience
steered
you down this path?
Yeah. You know, I knew myself. I had done previous studio time in Bellingham when I was 15 mm-hmm. or so. And once I got to Nashville and saw the world of songwriting and being a recording artist, that's what I wanted to do. I was convinced. And I spent a year going back and forth working with a different producer at the Castle Studio in Nashville,
mm-hmm.
trying to find out what my sound was. And through that experience, I got connected with people who eventually introduced me to Pam, who is now managing me full-time.
And Pam Moore is here. Pam, of course, lives here on the island, has for how long, Pam?
8 years.
She is Richard Rogers' neighbor, and Richard is our webmaster for Voice of Vashon, and is responsible for our website and all kinds of things. And Pam was the... now, just let me swing a microphone here. Hang on just a second. There you go. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning.
You didn't expect to be a part of this interview,
not.
Did you? So how is it that, now are you all like family friends? What's the story here?
At this point, yes.
Yes, yeah. We really have.
Yeah, definitely. Did you not know each other before, or?
No, we were introduced by a mutual friend, Robert Knight, and
uh-huh.
who's a rock photographer, and I worked with Robert, and he worked with Emery through Brotherhood of the Guitar, which is a singer-songwriter website
uh-huh.
for up-and-coming people, and that he made the connection for us, and then we just got to be very close friends with the family and just kind of assisting Emery wherever we could, and then from there, it kind of grew into a more solid relationship.
Oh, excellent. That is so great.
Yeah.
So we'll see you on Vashon quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because of the connection here.
Strawberry Festival.
Oh, you've already got a stage picked out?
I am. Pete Welch got me a...
Yeah. Do you know which stage you're going to be on?
The main stage.
The main stage.
Oberstage.
The Oberstage.
Which one's the Ober?
I don't know. There's a lot of...
That is... Oberpark is the main stage.
Oh, great.
And I will be emceeing somewhere on that stage at some point during the weekend. So maybe I get to introduce you.
Perfect.
I'll hope
great.
For that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Emery.
Yes.
This Brotherhood of the Guitar, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Which was kind of how it was a little bit of your breakout in a way.
It was.
Tell us what that was about.
Through the Castle Studio, which I referred to earlier,
mm-hmm.
a mutual friend told Robert Knight, who mm-hmm. started the Brotherhood, about me. And at the time, he was looking for girls to bring on board to the Brotherhood. And, you know, female guitar players, songwriters, and I fit that niche.
Uh-huh.
And so he came to Seattle, saw me, brought me on board to the Brotherhood, and got me, you know, FaceTime with Fender and in the Guitar Center Buyer's Guide, and, you know, really got the ball rolling in that way.
Yeah. Well, that's what a nice connection that was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
So what was the first song you ever wrote?
The first song I ever wrote that was good.
Yeah. No, I said the first song you ever wrote. Was this back when you were like 10?
Yeah, 9. I wrote a song called A Thousand Miles.
A Thousand Miles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was the first song.
Was it about being on the road?
It was about my dad, actually. Uh-huh. He's a FedEx pilot.
Uh-huh.
Or he was a pilot. He's flying commercial since he was 21. And he would do all these amazing trips to Tokyo and Sydney, and he was always traveling. And so it was about essentially missing my dad, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I always like to ask that question because everybody has a first song that they wrote, of course, unless you're not a singer-songwriter, in which case you've never written a song. But, okay, that's great, A Thousand Miles. let's hear a song, not that particular one necessarily, but... Let's just hear. You kind of come from the Pacific Northwest, kind of, as I mentioned earlier, kind of flows through your music,
right?
I think that's probably true of a lot of people who grow up here. But tell us about the first song you'll play for us.
This first song is called "He'll Call."
He'll Call.
Mm-hmm. And I wrote this on the floor of my laundry room in my sorority, freshman year of college.
Okay.
And
while waiting, to the rhythm of the tumbling dryer, is that what was going on?
Yes, it was beautiful. And this song especially speaks to my friends, my age group at college,
right?
And see if you like it.
Okay. I will dial in the mix here as we go. Here's Emery Franklin on The Voice of Vashon.
And you know that he should treat you like a princess, but these days all you shoot for is decent. It's sick to think that this is how normal is, and it's best to expect less. Go and live with the side effects. Yeah, don't suggest attachment when you're not inside his head. But he'll call and you'll go, 'cause he knows that you'll never say no. And just once, then you're lost. Hate yourself, but then you love that you're something you want. And he'll call and you'll go. Whoa. And he'll call and you'll go, 'cause he knows that you'll never say no. No, you'll never say no. You're all his, but he belongs to no one. It conflicts with everything you should want, but it's hot and he's got you all curious. And that night call is your downfall. You can't get off his speed dial. Wish you could say, please go away, but it's late, so why are you still awake? 'Cause he'll call and you'll go, 'cause he knows that you'll never say no. And just once, then you're lost. Hate yourself, but then you love that you're something he wants. And he'll call and you'll go. Whoa. And he'll call and you'll go, 'cause he knows that you'll never say no.
Wonderful. He'll call on Voice of Vashon. Emery Franklin here at 912 on the Voice of Vashon. Wow. That's great.
Thank you.
You have such presence and poise. It's really impressive. 20 years old. It's just, that blows my mind. So
Thank you.
Off you went to spend a year in Nashville. You were, what, how old, 17? When you were there?
I actually moved there and lived there for a year.
Uh-huh.
And that was when I was 18.
18 years mm-hmm. old. So you're in Nashville, mm-hmm. wide-eyed. Probably, had you ever been to a, kind of a, like a music capital like that? Had you ever been to Memphis or any other place like that?
No.
Yeah.
So, I was cold.
So there's Record Row mm-hmm. right there with all the classic old recording studios.
Right.
What was it about Nashville that spoke to you?
I think it was the education of songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Before I went to Nashville, I was writing songs in my bedroom by myself, just going off of the model that I was hearing from artists that I admired.
Yeah.
You know, the basic structure of how you make a song and my own poetry.
Uh-huh.
And when I went to Nashville, I was thrown into this world of professional songwriters who write a song or two a day, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was finding the balance between what is a formula and what is commercial and what is raw and authentic and mixing those.
Mm.
And it is an art.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, it is.
And having, you know, learning that and figuring out what I can bring to the table as a songwriter and who I mesh with. And some songwrites, you'll get in the room with somebody and the chemistry's there and it works and the song is great. And sometimes it's like pulling teeth.
Yeah. So you're doing a lot of collaborating down there.
Yeah. Yeah. Every day, you know, maybe 4 days a week out of six, I was writing with somebody else, two uh-huh. or three people in a room.
Yeah. And after doing it by yourself
mm-hmm.
and having entire control of the process all and without any ears other than once you finally play the song for somebody, to suddenly start working with other writers in the room. Was that an adjustment? Did that take some time to figure out, or did it just feel right from the get-go?
Completely. When I first got there, I was so eager to write with everybody, and I just mm-hmm. wanted to experience as much as I could. And I would write with country writers, and I would write with more bluesy writers, and I'd write with pop writers. And each person brought a different thing to the table. And after a year, I was able to hone in on what I like to write the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I went from writing with probably 50 writers to writing with four writers that I like.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that when I got in the room with that person, we were going to get something that was what I wanted to say in the right sound.
Yeah. Did it surprise you where your sound shifted to?
Yeah.
Over the time that you were there?
Yeah, that's... The last 6 months really has been a makeover of who I am.
Uh-huh.
Not, you know, definitely in an authentic way. But I first went to Nashville with only my acoustic guitar. That's all I'd ever done. It was kind of indie folk rock.
Right.
And then I realized I'm a lyricist. My music moves with a hard driving beat. And I don't want it to be that pretty. I want it to have some grit behind it uh-huh. to really get across the message and the integrity of the lyrics.
Because I can hear He'll Call
mm-hmm.
fully produced
yeah.
in my head
yeah.
just listening to it. I mean, it could be a much bigger song
mm-hmm.
than just you on the guitar.
Exactly.
So that must have been a real eye-opening experience to see where all the possibilities, where they could go. And there's some influences in your voice and the way you move around. I'm just wondering, who are your primary influences musically?
From a female vocalist, I love Alanis Morissette.
Yeah.
And the way she delivers and her honesty, and she's not afraid to put
some right there.
Ugliness
yeah.
in her voice.
Yeah.
So I love her. My first hero was Dido.
Uh-huh.
Her falsetto vocal range is just amazing.
Yeah, I had a Dido song selected for today.
Perfect.
Actually. Yeah. So you listen to these people, mm-hmm. you know, growing up, and now you're able to kind of write with their voice in your head. And working with all of these other collaborators, now you have four songwriters that you kind of have settled in on that are kind of your partners in crime, as it were.
Yeah.
And now, are these going to be... obviously, you know, a CD has got to be in the works or heading down. You're heading down that path,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to hear at the end here. We're going to hear a fully produced song that you worked on over
right.
the course of the last year and a half.
Yeah,
it's pretty new, right?
Yeah, with the "Get You Alone," the song mm-hmm. we're about to hear. I actually wrote that song last year with my co-writer,
mm-hmm.
who produced the track in New York this last May as well.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Or in May.
Well, yeah. I think just for the sake of contrast, we ought to just jump into it.
Okay.
And play the big produced song and then come back and talk a little bit more, but also I want to hear another one of your songs just
great.
Right here. It's really a pleasure to watch you play. There's great joy in your face. There's just... You seem really connected, so that's a great thing.
Good.
So this is called "Get You Alone," and this was produced where? Was this in Nashville?
The song was written in Nashville
uh-huh.
and produced by Alex Bilowitz in New York.
Okay, so here is Emery with a little bit of assistance from a band and a collaborator, Alex Bilowitz.
Mm-hmm.
Bilowitz, is that's how you pronounce his name. This is "Get You Alone" here on The Voice of Vashon.
I pretend dancing like it's the end, but you stay standing your ground. This charade, I can't begin to explain, but you watch me as I move through the crowd. Don't you know? Don't you know you're the only thing I want? Don't you know I'ma put on a show just to get you alone, get you alone. Oh, oh, oh. Time is slipping away. I need to make you my own, make you my own. Don't you know, you should know.
And there it is. Get You Alone, Emery Franklin. And wow, that is the big production, big sound. It's just, that's a spectacular tune.
Thank you.
What a way to debut it, too. This was the world premiere.
This was.
Yeah.
This is it.
What a worthwhile one, I would say.
It's my first time hearing my song on the radio.
Well, it was wonderful. And I mean, you can definitely hear the Alanis coming out. And when you get into the upper range, you can hear the Dido a little bit. But it's a unique blend of your presence that comes to it.
Cindy's here, by the way.
Good morning.
Everybody.
Did she bring coffee?
She did. I brought coffee.
Yeah.
Kind of rough night.
Promise.
Yeah. Yeah. You know how that goes.
So we're here visiting with Emery. What did you want to say there?
Well, I just wanted to say I was rushing in going, oh, I got to get there in time. Because I really wanted to meet you and hear you play in person.
Well, thank you. Thank you for rushing in.
I want to talk about what we were just talking about off the air, which is the fact that you grew up the daughter of a couple of master falconers.
Yes.
And I don't even know what that is. I know that the falcon is a bird.
Yes.
I don't know much about how people work with them. I know they're incredibly fast and powerful. And you were just telling a story while we were off the air that you just have to repeat here on the radio.
Well, so when I grew up on the family farm, and my dad's work was with peregrine falcons and training. We did a National Geographic movie and a Disney production on his work with falcons, which was free fall. So he would skydive with the birds, and they were trained to follow him with tracking on their backs so we could track their speed. And
so he's falling, and they're flying with him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they just sort of leave the is it a gauntlet that it's called?
The glove. The glove, the fist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they would leave that after he jumped out of the plane?
Yeah, so they would, the bird, Frightful, was the famous bird.
Uh-huh.
She would go up with my dad in the airplane, and when they got to their height, they would open the jump door, throw the bird out.
Okay. Into the deep end, I would say.
Yeah.
And my dad would jump out,
uh-huh.
and she knew to follow him. She'd been imprinted on him.
Yeah.
And he had a lure with a lead ball.
Uh-huh.
And so when he dropped the lure, Frightful would take off after it. And, birds, they transform into a steer.